Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
Hey, it's Wednesday, hump day, middle of the week. We're starting that long, slow glide down to the end of the week in Powhana Friday. MEO is running. The chat room is open. Email is buzzing along. All systems are go. And we are ready to rock and roll for today. Now, speaking of rock and roll, obviously, we're going to start off with the economic news as we normally do. The Dow started up, went down, was heading down rapidly, and then an hour before the bell, there was a hard, upward, very suspicious, obvious shove, and it ended up 89 points. I'm not sure how reassuring this is to people. It does look very clearly like somebody exerted a great deal of force to reverse a downward trend. We know that Barack Obama has come out basically trying to say we're making progress, you know, we're through the worst. He's trying to reassure everybody without providing any actual facts, of course. And we know that the Dow gets manipulated for political reasons. So we'll see. Now, there were some other pieces of news from the financial world. Manufacturing reported an increase in orders in the month of February. And this was on the corporate news media today. But what they're not telling you is that a large, significant part of this increase is defense-related. The U.S. government is ordering more of whatever they order to go out and kill people with. And that is the improvement in the economy. We continue to be a warmongering nation. We continue to manufacture and export, often by ballistic arc, things that kill people. And that is, if you take that part of it out, we're still not showing any signs of an increase of manufacturing in the private sector, civilian life. Now, the other report that we got is that U.S. Home prices rose a little bit, and new home sales increased last month. Now, if that is true, everyone's saying this is an indicator the real estate market is coming back. Okay, fair enough. But if that's true, if in the months of January and February we're starting to see homes start to sell again, then this idea that the banks and mortgage companies are prevented from making new home loans because of the toxic subprime mortgages on their books, that obviously cannot be true. They are obviously able to go on making loans and, you know, issuing mortgages for these homes. Business is continuing. They're not paralyzed. They're not prevented from doing these loans out there, especially because they just turn around and go to the Federal Reserve and borrow the money from them. They add their little uplift on it, and they put it out the door as a mortgage. The money is literally created the instant you sign the loan document. That's how the process works. And so it looks like this whole issue of the toxic subprime mortgages was not really an issue. It's a bookkeeping problem. It looks bad. But they're obviously able to operate without the taxpayer having to come in and absorb those losses, which unfortunately is what we're doing. Over and over again, we're seeing the solution to the economic downturn is to take the losses and dump them on the taxpayer. And there was this wonderful individual, one of the ministers of parliament, got up before the European Congress today and just tore into Britain's prime minister. And in the middle of his speech, which was very good, very sharp, full of accurate facts, could have been a speech about the United States as well as Great Britain. And he said right in the middle, you cannot spend your way out of a recession. You cannot borrow your way out of debt. And I would add to that, you cannot tax a nation to prosperity. And yet everything the government of the United States is doing right now involves taking money from the American people and giving it to the banks in Wall Street. And it's a very short-sighted policy, because the more money they take away from the poor and working classes of America, the less we can go out and buy things at the store. That's the reason the manufacturing is not going up. There are no customers, because our money's being taken away. We're all scared. How are we ever going to pay this stuff up? You know, we're in the last 6 months, $40,000 worth of debt has been dumped on each one of us. And we, the people, are far more prudent than the U.S. government or the American corporations. We know we have to live within our means. Now, from the government and the corporations' point of view, they just assume that we, the people, are a bottomless well of money that they can dip into whenever they feel it's appropriate. And I'm sorry, but that dipper is hitting the rocks at the bottom of that well. It's empty out here, and that's the reality. There really isn't a credit crisis. These figures prove it. The banks and mortgage companies are issuing mortgages for people to buy homes. So this whole idea that this whole economic problem was the result of the subprime mortgage, the toxic subprime mortgages, is complete nonsense. It's just not true. Now, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, Obama is talking about he sees signs of progress on the economic crisis. Well, I'm sure all of his friends are doing really good. But as we hear these pronouncements about how things are turning around and things are going to get better and just stick with us and it's all going to work out, just look around with your own eyes. Look at the vacancy rate at your local shopping mall. Look at how many people around you are out of work and getting desperate and getting hungry. And, you know, we have friends and family members. They've just about hit the end of their resources. A lot of people are just coasting. They're using up their savings. They're living on their credit cards. They're emptying their kids' piggy banks to get by, and when all of that little bit of cushion they manage to have gets used up, things are going to start getting really, really ugly out there. And I'm sorry, but when Obama gets up there and talks about how, you know, we're getting things under control and everything, I'm not buying it. You know, he's only been in the job for a couple of months now, and I think his credibility's totally blown. Now, I'm not like Rush Limbaugh, who came out and said he wants President Obama to fail. Then he backed off and he clarified it and said, well, I just want certain parts of his agenda to fail, which admittedly makes a little bit more sense. I don't want President Obama to fail, per se. I want him to do a good job about bringing America back to what we had before, to bring back those jobs for the working and middle-class people that they had before. We're not asking for anything new, and we're not asking for charity. What we want back is what we had before, and I want President Obama to succeed in doing that. But he's not trying to do that, and the things he's trying to do, it's not a question of wanting him to fail. I see that he will fail because he's taking the fix for the economy in the wrong direction. He's taking the money from the wrong people, and he's giving it to the wrong people. He is moving the money in exactly the wrong direction. His fiscal, his approach to curing the economy of the United States seems far more Republican than Democrat to me. And it's increasing the instability in the economy rather than smoothing things out so it can start functioning again. So that's where we are in the economy. I'm going to move on to some other things because I know a lot of people are getting really, really tired about this stuff. Now, as you heard on the last news break, North Korea has put a missile on the launch pad, and everybody's, oh, those darn North Koreans. And the brouhaha, now North Korea has said, we are going to launch a satellite, which technological nations will do. They have gone through all of the appropriate international notifications to say, we are launching a satellite into this orbit. We expect the stages of the rocket to come down on these places in the ocean. And we advise shipping to be out of there because that's where these things are going to fall down. And we're going to go up there and hopefully our satellite will stay out of everybody else's way. But the U.S. government and Japan and a bunch of other concerned parties are saying, well, you know, this really is a preparation for war because the rocket that they're using to launch the satellite is the Taipodong 2, which is also capable of carrying a nuclear weapon. And therefore, we must view this theoretically benign satellite as an overt provocative act. This is kind of along the same lines of trying to turn Iran's power station into a nuclear threat. And here is the reason why. When the Mercury and Gemini manned space programs were underway in this country, the rockets they were using to go into space were modified ICBM nuclear weapons carriers. We're going to take a break here. If you want to join us on the air, 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. Donovan's in the control room. Pick up the phone, punch the buttons. We'll be right back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program. Call Mike now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here. As you heard over the news break just before the start of the show, the National Transportation Safety Board has come out and basically confirmed what we were telling you before about the plane crash, the Continental Commuter Flight crash in Buffalo, New York, a month ago. And when the plane went down, the corporate news media was saying, oh, had to be ice, had to be ice, had to be this, had to be this. You know, almost a replay of the Paul Wellstone situation, where even before the NTSB investigators get there, the TV media is trying to tell you what brought the airplane down, which is always a red warning sign. When they're trying to sell you a story before the facts are actually known, you really have to be suspicious. We pointed out that the weather conditions there, as reported by the local weather stations, were not conducive to dangerous levels of icing. We pointed out the multiple anti-icing systems that were on that aircraft. Then we found out that those anti-icing systems were, in fact, operating at the time of this plane. And now today we have the NTSB coming out and saying, well, as a matter of fact, yeah, there was a little bit of ice, but it wasn't really a factor. And so what we have now is this airplane on approach to the airport for no reason anybody can determine. The nose pitches up very sharply, meaning it lost elevator control, stalled, pancaked down to the ground, and crashed. A lot of people are wondering, you know, what could cause something like this? Obviously, sabotage. If there was somebody on board, that might be a potential problem to somebody down the road. And as a matter of fact, there were some people on board, chief among whom was Beverly Eckert, who was one of the 9/11 widows. And Beverly was famous because she had refused to take the government-offered settlement of cash for the death of her husband, because with that offer of cash came a requirement to stay silent, to never talk about 9/11, to basically go away and don't bother the government that loves you anymore. And Beverly refused to take the money and became one of the most outspoken and vocal critics of the official story of 9/11. She was starting to expand her field of activity. She was getting into this whole issue of the torture that had been going on in places like Abu Ghraib and Guantanamo. And she was becoming an outspoken public critic of the Bush administration, and presumably, had she survived, the Obama administration, regarding the egregious violations of the Constitution, which we're going to be getting into that a little bit later in the show as well. So, we don't know what happened, but we know that over the last several years, certainly while I've been paying attention over the lifespan of WhatReallyHappened.com, which is now 16, going into its 17th year here in another month or two, in fact, 17 years. Wow. Oh, man. I can't believe that. But there have been so many plane crashes which just don't make sense, whether it's the plane crash that killed Ron Brown, whether it was TWA 800 and all the hundreds and hundreds of witnesses who saw a missile kill that 747, Paul Wellstone's crash, I mean, just John F. Kennedy Jr., just all of these plane crashes that seem to get rid of somebody's convenient enemy, and they never really make sense. And the NTSB hems and haws, and, you know, finally they'll ascribe it to pilot error or something like that, and it goes away. But there are always questions and contradictions and facts that do not fit. We know now, in the case of the Buffalo commuter flight, that ice was not the issue that we were assured it was by the TV news at the time. And that means they don't really have a reason. They don't know what's going on, why the airplane simply nosed up suddenly, putting itself into a stall and pancaking onto the ground and killing everybody on board. So that's where we are on that story. Now, I want to get back to this, what's called the GIVE Act, the Mandatory Service, the National Service Act. There's been a version of this that's passed in the House. There's a version that passed in the Senate. This is the bill that will create a national corps of, they're calling them volunteers, but of course, if it's mandatory, it's not really volunteerism. And this national service bill, it's modeled on the Israeli model. They're trying to turn the United States into another version of Israel. And this national service bill will require young people to go through basically a boot camp and then be made available for national service around the country, or possibly in war zone, not as combat troops, but as the auxiliaries, logistics, the back row people who are there handing the bullets to the front lines, that kind of a situation. And I have several problems with this bill. First of all, these services that these young people are going to be forced to do are the ones that our taxes are supposed to be paying for. So now the government's kind of double dipping. They're still taking the taxes. We're not seeing taxes go down. But now the things the government is supposed to be doing with the taxes, they're now going to have these conscripts do. And that is a violation of the 13th Amendment against involuntary servitude. You're not allowed to make slaves of the American people for any reason. It is against the Constitution. But more egregious than that, Representative George Miller, a Democrat from California, tacked an amendment onto the House version of this bill, which this amendment prohibits organizations from attempting to influence legislation, organize or engage in protests, petitions, boycotts, or strikes, and assist, promote, or deter union organizing. Now, I'm sorry, this is a violation of the First Amendment. We're allowed to protest. The Founding Fathers thought it was our duty to protest what's going on with the government. And yes, we're supposed to influence legislation. And we're allowed to organize to influence legislation because it says right there in the First Amendment, we have a right to peaceably assemble. Obviously, if you're going to peacefully assemble, that implies organization. We agree to meet by the Tree of Liberty at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. That's organizing right there. And so on top of this whole concept of national service, which is a violation of the 13th Amendment, they're now coming out with this amendment. Whether there's going to be a version like it in the Senate or whether it'll survive reconciling the two bills, we don't know. But if this goes forward, this is another assault on our First Amendment right to freedom of speech and our right to protest against the government. We're going to go to the phones now. We've got Henry in Oregon. Aloha, Henry. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Hello, Mikey. First of all, thanks for all your dedication and everything. I like your website and stuff, and really, we really appreciate you. Okay, then I will be brief. It was interesting because I wanted to share a quick email that I got because it was encouraging, and you don't get many of these days. And then it ended up going right to the joke a little late. This email will only take 10 seconds, and I'll let you go. But it says, "Dear Henry," it goes along with what you're just talking about, Henry. "I am Sahar Vardi. I am 18 years old, a senior in high school in Israel. As you probably know, Israel must serve in the Israeli Defense Forces starting right after our last year of high school."
Okay, Henry?
Yeah.
You're fading in and out, but I actually did get the same email, and I did post it at the letters section of what really happened.
Yeah, my phone kind of is bad. I just wanted to share that with you, and I'll let you go because my phone's bad.
Yeah, okay, I'm sorry about that. Henry, recharge your battery and call back in at some other time. We're going to take another break here if you want to join us on the air. 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
This is the GCN Radio Network.
You're listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here. A lot of stuff going on. We've got callers on the line. We're going to go to Clarence in Oklahoma. Aloha, Clarence. Welcome back to the show.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Mike. You were talking about the airplane crashes and the suspicious circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
I just brought to mind, and I'm still very curious about this, but you remember the case of the D.C. madam?
Oh yeah, we had her on the show here just.
That's right, she did. Yeah, she said she would never commit suicide.
That's right.
She was conveniently found hanging in her mother's garage.
Mm-hmm.
And I had discussed this with someone who would know about these kind of things. My sister, and she knows a little something about this. Women don't normally commit suicide by hanging.
No, they don't.
Nor by firearms. It's normally by pills or overdoses. Or
yeah, because they don't want to mess up their appearance and their looks. Women who do commit suicide with firearms, it does happen, but they'll shoot themselves in the chest. Men will shoot themselves in the head. Women who commit suicide with firearms will shoot themselves in the chest, which is why a couple of the young ladies who were friends with Bill Clinton who were suicided because they were shot in the head, that raised some red flags there. But, yeah, the situation with the D.C. madam was very weird. Because, I mean, first of all, why would she do it at her mother's house? Her mother had a heart condition. It was like almost guaranteeing that mom was going to have a coronary right there when she found the body. So, and, you know, as you said, Deborah Jean had been on the show, not just my show, also Alex Jones, and had said, if I am found dead, it's not suicide. There's stuff out there, mostly about Dick Cheney and going on from that. And the situation was, suicide is something you do when you're desperate and there's no hope for the future. And yes, Deborah Jean was going to go to jail, but she had a book deal, she had a pending movie deal, you know, her finances were all in order, she had enough money in the bank to keep the payments going on her condo and the homeowners association while she was away in jail. She was going to come out of jail a very wealthy woman. And, you know, and it wasn't like she was being sent up for hard time. She was, you know, going to wind up in one of these country club type prisons. And, yeah, nobody wants to go to jail. But if you know you're going to sit in jail for a couple of years and when you come out, you're fixed for life, you know, that's not entirely, you know, a terrible prospect. So she really wasn't under the kind of pressure that you see would drive somebody to suicide. And, of course, the manner of the suicide itself is very suspicious.
Yeah, you know, what really I noticed it was very obvious was how fast mainstream media ran away from that story.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that was just a blip. You know, she committed suicide. They claimed there was a note found. But no one ever...
Yeah, and there were some issues about the note where it didn't really appear to be her handwriting. We compared it because we had some handwritten notes from Deborah Jean ourselves. And when we looked at it between the published suicide note, and there were some very major discrepancies there. But you're right. The corporate media said, okay, she's dead, and now a word from our sponsor. And we were
that's
on
it.
To something
I mean,
else.
They ran away from that like the Flash.
Yes.
And, you know, that's the last we had. And it's amazing how something like that can disappear off the radar screen in a hurry when they want to.
Yeah, and of course now we find out that yes, the U.S. government has been running an assassination squad that reported directly to Dick Cheney.
Well, how much of a coinky-dink is that, as some of my friends would say. Okay, I just thought I'd bring that up. Just one of those interesting little things where it lets us know what kind of nation we're living in today.
Yeah, well, I think we're all finding out that we're living in a nation that's not what we were taught in the state schools that we were living in. Thanks a lot for the call, Clarence. We're going to switch over now to Drew in California. Drew, aloha. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Oh, not a whole lot here. I just kind of had a good laugh. I've been listening to the talk about this ridiculous plan that they've cooked up to make the soldiers
Which
pay
one?
Their own.
Oh, that.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they backed off on that one. They backed off on that one, yeah.
Yeah, but the point is that they, A, thought it was a good idea, and B, actually said it out loud.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would think that somebody would have said, you know, maybe this isn't a good idea. I mean, I don't know. Personally, I think they just shot up the ranks of those soldiers who will not obey their orders without even realizing it. But kind of on that subject, it was kind of funny. I was talking to somebody the other day, and it seems that, you know, I mean, we're talking about this, you know, the revolution is currently being fought with keyboards and camcorders, megaphones and cell phones, and we're winning.
Yes.
No doubt about that. We are able to bypass all of the you know, the propaganda outlets by simply, you know, by talking to each other, which... You know, surprise, surprise, still works after thousands of years,
mm-hmm.
rather than listening to, you know, our version of Pravda, you know, in its various forms, whether it's the New York Times or CNN or any of hundreds of others. But I see this, you know, this kind of a point coming up in the near future where the powers that be realize that they've actually lost and do something desperate. But I think that when that happens, as far as I can tell, it'll already be too late because too many people will know exactly who they are and what they've been up to.
Mm-hmm.
Won't have anybody left to carry out their orders.
I agree. I am personally convinced that when the United States government finally falls, it will be as bloodless and as quick as the USSR. And it will come about simply because the government will owe too much money. Go ahead.
Certainly, I would say more like Romania. I don't think they're going to go that quietly, but I think when they try something, they're going to find out very quickly that the people loyal to them are basically the top brass, and everybody else is going, no, you know, you go hide in your bunkers. We're just going to fill them with concrete behind you.
Yeah, that's a very, very good image. And, we just saw that in Madagascar. And we've seen it in Iceland. We've seen it in a lot of places, and I think that's why the U.S. government's getting nervous. I hope that when the U.S. government collapses, and I see it as inevitable, I don't see any way to save the situation. They're going to collapse, and they're going to take their debts with them.
The captain's drunk at the helm, screaming, "Damn the torpedoes!"
Yeah. But Romania at least had the benefit of being fast. It was all over with in just 2 weeks' time. But it was a little more bloody than I would like to see. And again, you know, time will solve that mystery. But I really do see the United States government as going the way the USSR did. And there was a little bit of bloodshed and violence there as the old regime tried to cling to power. And they wound up having to take a tank and shoot some holes in a couple of public buildings. But, you know, as transitions between nations go, that's almost a model for bloodless and quiet transition of power. And I hope it'll be that way here in the United States. But the bottom line, we had an article that we ran on whatreallyhappened.com just yesterday. It's really down to 2 points. The U.S. government is either going to default and go out of business, or it's going to have to start a major war and try and kill everybody that they owe money to. And all we can do is try and prevent the second one.
And both are really the options of lunatics, of course. I think they like the second one better.
Well, it's our job. It's our job to prevent that.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
Of course it is. And like I said, I think when it finally comes, I think it will be relatively painless, or I should say more so than the other option, but they're going to have to slink off in the middle of the night to their palatial estates in South America and hope nobody finds them.
No, that's how Batista did it, you know, just got a bulldozer, dug up his parents' coffins, loaded them on an airplane with his money, and took off. And we already know the Bush family has bought this huge chunk of land in, I think it's Paraguay, you know, enough to declare their own nation, call it Bush country or something. And I have no doubt that our top leaders already have their bailout plans ready, because I think one of the reasons we're not seeing any actions consistent with the long-term recovery of the economy is they know it can't be saved. And what we're seeing is the looting of the nation. You know, we have this quote that we have on a coffee cup around here. The last official act of any government is to loot the nation. I think that's what's going on right in front of our eyes. They're just grabbing all the gold out of the treasury, and they're skedaddling for the border. Thanks an awful lot for the call, Drew. We got to take a break here before we come back for our last section of the show today. If you want to join us on the air, 800-259-9231. We will be right back.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means
they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the last segment of our show today. And I wanted to comment, you know, watching the corporate media TV feeds here, listening to the radio going in and out of my day job earlier today. And it seems to me that even though the election is over and done with, it's not just Obama who's out there still campaigning. We're seeing all of this nattering and gromishing going on about the current budget, about how the Republicans think it's spending too much money. The Democrats are saying it isn't spending enough. A lot of people were expecting increases in certain social programs. The increases aren't quite as large as they were expecting. So they're saying, oh, this represents a cut, because even though we got only, you know, $2 last year, we were expecting $5 this year, and you're giving me only $4, so that's a loss of $1, and everybody's complaining and scrapping about for the money. But, you know, it occurs to me, watching the TV and listening to the radio, what is being sold here is a continuance of this false dichotomy of Republican versus Democrat. I think the powers that imagine they are very much aware that we, the American people, are pretty much fed up with the government. We're seeing what has happened in places like Madagascar, Greece, Iceland. And I think the government is trying very hard to get us back into this idea of arguing back and forth, liberal versus conservative, Republican versus Democrat, in the hope that we can be dissuaded from uniting as an American people and directing our anger at the government as a whole. I am one of those people who thinks that is what we should be doing, because the mess this country is in is the result of both political parties' greed and stupidity. And arguing over whose neck deserves the tallest tree and the shortest rope is counterproductive. I don't want to see us split into arguing endlessly over whether the rich should get taxed more or the poor should get taxed more. We're all taxed too much, rich and poor alike. The government is taxing, taking way too much money away from us. They're giving hardly anything back. We're being taxed into poverty, as we are seeing just from the last 6 months, to make rich people richer. And now that the government is so deep in debt that all of its tax revenues are going to debt management, they're creating this national service program so that we, the American people, will go out and do the work that we used to get for our taxes. And if we're going out and we're doing the work of making the country better, if we're fixing our own roads and building our own buildings and teaching our own kids, then what do we need the government for at all? Because if it's not going to take care of the nation, the only thing the government is doing is taking money, spending it, having a wild party on the taxpayer expense, and of course, running around the world killing brown people. So if the government isn't going to take care of the country, if they're going to insist that we go out and do that for ourselves, and I'm okay with that, but if we're going to do that, then really, what do we need the government for? What do we need the federal government for? I'm very happy with the state government. Why do we need a federal government above that if all it's going to do is take money and then turn around and tell us, fix the road yourself? They're going to take the money and, you know, go give bombs to Israel so that Israel can commit war crimes and then scream that we're all being unfair and anti-Semitic when we point out the fact that Israel did commit war crimes with those white phosphorus bombs that we, the American people, were forced to buy for them. Who needs that? What possible good is that for the American people? And I'm watching the chat room. People are responding to this idea about the United States government falling, and they hope I'm right in that the U.S. government will basically collapse in on itself from its own rot the way the USSR did. And yes, that's the best of all possible outcomes. And take its debt with it. Okay? We're obviously heading towards a crisis. Personally, I think it's inevitable. I think we're heading to a crisis. I think the U.S. government is going to go away. And we need to start thinking what we're going to be doing after that happens. How to survive the period of confusion, which won't be too long. And then, most important, what kind of a government do we want afterwards? I'm in favor of going back to the original Constitution and the Bill of Rights and starting from there and moving forward. Treasury makes the money. The Federal Reserve is banned, just like we had with the Founding Fathers. We just cut off that superstructure of rot and privilege and corruption that was tacked onto what was at one time a working republic. And we start with that. And then after that, the political process will take over. And that's what I'd like to see happen. Now, as far as the U.S. government coming down, right now the only thing holding the U.S. economy and the government together is this implied promise that no matter how bad things get in the United States and how much money the government borrows, that the American people will always step up to the plate and pay for it all. That was the demonstration back during the SNL crisis in the 1980s, that the American people were going to cover the losses of the SNLs. Now, the American people are being forced to cover the losses of the investment banks and the mortgage companies and AIG and all these other institutions. And as long as we go along with that, then the government will just simply go on and say, well, we can get the American people to cover this, and they can cover that, and they'll pay for these losses, and we'll pay for that. And the American people will pay for it all, and we'll just have a really wonderful system here where we get to keep all the riches that we make, and when things go bad, the American people will pick up the tab for us. And from the point of view of the ultra-rich, that's a wonderful system. From the point of view of you and I and the teachers and the doctors and the road builders and the bricklayers and the carpenters who actually make this nation and put it together and make it run, that's not such a very good deal. And so somewhere down the road, there's going to be a moment where the greedy bastards are going to reach out their claws to us one more time, and we're just going to slap them on the knuckles and say, no more. We don't have it. It's not a question of whether we want to pay for it all or not. We don't have anymore. And at that point, things are going to get ugly. And I will tell you this also. If it comes to an outright revolution in this country, the revolution will not have to march into Washington, D.C. to win. All it has to do is survive. All it has to do is survive long enough to send the message to other countries and to all those individuals to whom the U.S. government owes money that we, the American people, are not going to make the payments on those loans anymore. And as soon as that message is heard, all foreign investment in the U.S. will be pulled out, and the government and the industry will collapse. That's how Castro beat Batista in Cuba. Castro never marched on the capital city of Havana until he marched in his victory parade. So these are interesting times, no doubt, and I'm sure a lot of you probably agree with me. We wish it wasn't like this. You know, I loved the country that I was born into, or at least the country I thought I was living in, you know, before the Kennedy assassination, you know, where we could somewhat trust and rely on our government to keep things in check, and we could focus our energy on our family and on our immediate career and building a business and building a better life for ourselves. And we could step away from having to pay attention, such close attention, to what the government was doing. Unfortunately, we're in an age right now where we have to keep an eye on the government every single minute, or they're going to walk off with the silverware. And I don't like living like that. And I think the only positive note here is I don't think we're going to have to live like that much longer. So, and hey, if letting them take the silverware is the price for them leaving entirely, let them take the silverware. I'll go back to using plastic for a while. Anyway, let's moving right along here. And one story, just real, real quick. There was a situation down in Miami. There was an attempted robbery of a Burger King in which a perpetrator came in wearing a mask, pulled out a gun and said, give me all your money. A customer who had a concealed weapons permit pulled his gun, exchanged fire with the criminal. The robber was killed at the scene. My comment on that was, good. This provoked a huge, huge reaction from customers, from readers who said, yeah, half of them said good, and the other half said, oh, that poor robber, he wasn't really going to hurt anybody. If you just let him have the money, he would have gone on his way. I'm sorry. That's why we have such out-of-control crime, is letting the robbers get away with the money. You know, I think if we start shooting a few more of them, crime is going to go down. Cops won't do it. All right, that's it for our show today. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place, with more news, more phone calls, and more mayhem. Until then, until tomorrow, at 5 p.m. Central Time, Stay safe, be well, hug your loved ones, drive carefully, and aloha, America.